Hey there, friends. Jay Revel here. Welcome to another episode of Mid-Am Crisis. I'm awfully excited to have you listening in today. As always, we have got a great show lined up for you. One of probably my all-time favorite people in the world of golf, golf course architect and principal designer of the King Collins golf design firm, Rob Collins. I got to meet Rob for the first time I think in 2017, back in the early days of Sweetens Cove Golf Club's what now seems like global success. And I was just captivated by the work that he had done there and his personality and character. He's just a wonderful human being. He's exactly what you would hope someone who is doing great work in golf would be like in person. He's just outgoing and personable and just the most, you know, enjoyable type of person to be around. He's had great success in recent years, along with his partner, Tad King, in their firm. And while confident in their abilities, immensely confident as he should be, he doesn't let it go to his head. He still stays very down to earth. When people text him, when people call him, he still picks up the phone, even though he's incredibly busy. And I'm so grateful that he gave me some time to catch up with him, have an in-depth conversation about golf design, about his career, about where things are today, both with his baby at Sweetens Cove and other courses that he's developing around the country. He's doing some fascinating work, and I think we're really on the verge of seeing King Collins Golf Design become one of the great duos of this era. I think when we look back in 20 years from now, and certainly beyond that, people are really going to gravitate to their work because it's different. It stands out. We talked about this a lot. There's a lot of incredible golf course architecture being built around the world today by some just, all-time firms. But what they're doing is different. It's unique. It takes the road less traveled. It is not minimalism. We got into that part of the discussion, and I think you're going to really find, Rob's takes very fascinating. He's not afraid to move dirt. He's not afraid to create. But he also, prides himself on doing just enough to make it the way it needs to be. And I love that about his architecture. I love his personality. It's big, it's bold, it's daring, it's stimulating. And I think that he is all of those things, just like the golf courses. He's an embodiment of the work that he does and vice versa. And again, just thrilled to have him on the show today. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. We've been pinging back and forth on text seemingly for quite a while now, trying to figure out a good time to do it. He's been out in Nebraska working on their new course, Landman Golf Club, which we talked about quite a bit. I think you're going to find that incredibly fascinating. I cannot wait to try to get out there. It just sounds like that place is off the charts. And we dug into courses that he's finished and courses that they've got on the way soon too. Again, fabulous conversation with Rob Collins. If you're a fan of Sweetens Cove, if you're a fan of his work, you're going to love this conversation. And if you haven't heard of him, if you haven't ever spent time at any of his golf courses, I got bad news. You're probably going to want to get in a car or on a plane pretty soon and go do that after you hear this conversation. So before I turn over to this conversation, I want to plug two things. Number one, my friends at Imagine Golf have been sponsoring the show for over a year now. They're great folks. I was just on a call with their founder and CEO, Malcolm, this week. They're doing some incredible stuff. They've got a whole new coaching platform that you're going to want to check out. If you're a fan of what they're doing, if you've downloaded the Imagine Golf app like 400,000 other golfers have, and you're listening to those 3-minute daily audio lessons to improve your mental game, now they've got this coaching platform available where you can join other golfers who are seeking to become better, seeking to become sharper thinkers on and off the course, and have this accountability measure, which is really, really cool and very, very unique. I just love what they're doing. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, go download the app. It's available in the App Store and on Google Play. Check it out. Again, if you haven't downloaded it, I cannot recommend it to you enough. I just won the second flight in our member guest tournament here at Capital City Country Club with my brother. It was an incredible experience. And I'm telling you, the things that I've learned about how I think on the golf course are helping me win. They're helping me play some of the best golf of my life, which is absurd considering the fact that I've got, you know, two kids now and a client list and all kinds of things going on. I shouldn't be doing it, but my thinking is so much better. It's just unbelievable. So download the Imagine Golf. Check out what they're doing with their now coaching classes. It's really, really cool. Cannot stress that enough. Go do that. The other thing, my new book, Swing, Walk, Repeat. You've probably heard me talk about it here on the show or seen me post about it on some social channels. It's available for pre-order now. We think we're going to get these things out to you folks in early December. I cannot wait for you to see this book. It is something I'm immensely proud of, the way in which we've put it together. It's a beautiful book. It's, I believe, some of my best work. I've had some others provide some really cool feedback on it. I can't tell you how excited I am to share that with the world. If you haven't had a chance, I would love for you to go to back9press.com. That's back9press.com. Reserve your copy today. Pre-orders are a unique thing. They help us tremendously. My friends at Back9 Press and I are, this is sort of a joint venture. Really, really fun to work with those guys and get this thing out in the world. But couldn't be more excited to share it with you. When you do a pre-order, it helps us be able to get these orders in and done and out into the world. And it just means the world to me every time I see one of those come in. I get the updates day to day, getting the awesome feedback from people, a lot of excitement. I would love for you to go and pre-order a copy of that book. Send me a message, send me a note, tell me. I'd love to interact with you and hear what you think about it when you get it in. So go order Swing, Walk, Repeat at back9press.com. I would love to have a conversation with you about the book. And when we get a little further down the road and that book gets to you, if you want to have me come to your club, to your place and talk about that book and talk about why we love golf or hop on a call and chat with you, just let me know. I'd love to do it. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the conversation over now to my discussion with Rob Collins of King Collins Golf. I think you're going to really love this one. Thanks as always for listening. Leave us a review wherever you're listening to the show. Enjoy this conversation with Rob Collins.
Rob.
How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. How are things in the big city of Chattanooga?
It's all good. Can't complain. Beautiful day here. So trying to keep the rain away from Sweetens, but it's all good. This is the best time of year to play golf here. So.
Oh man. Well, I woke up here in Tallahassee Sunday morning. It was about 50 degrees. And I was like, man, I love being reminded of why I live in North Florida. And then I start thinking, but I bet it's even better up in place like Chattanooga or South Pittsburgh.
Yeah, this is the best time of year. It's really, really good this time of year. So
I love it. Well, it looks like y'all had some fun out at the Sweetens member guest over the weekend.
We had a blast. It was terrific. Just continually amazed at the effort put forth by Matt and Brent and Colin and Colt and everybody to put on events like that. And they just did an awesome job and everyone had a great time. And they had the lights up on Thursday night, which was super cool and really good competition for 2 days and a lot of fun. And just one of those little events that make you remember why you like it so much.
Mm-hmm. What kind of format y'all run? Y'all running matches or what do y'all do?
We had two-man teams and we had 18 holes each day. And we had a best ball format one day, combined with a scramble. And then Matt has like a Pinehurst scramble that's kind of like an offshoot of a scramble, which was interesting, where both partners hit the ball, then they switch, okay, and you hit your partner's ball, and then from there you pick the best one in, best ball you want to play, and alternate in from there. So that was kind of fun. And then we had a double best ball, meaning every shot counts. So for a team event, that was good because it really ratcheted up the pressure. You know, there was no safety net, and a 4 or 5 stroke lead in your flight was not safe, because all it would take would be one bad hole from one person, and you know, you could plummet. So, and it just so happened that round coincided with the hardest conditions I've seen out there in a long time. The wind was blowing about 25 miles an hour consistently, and there was some good carnage.
I bet a little bit of ping pong action going on out there on some of your lovely greens.
Yep, for sure.
No, it's fun. Well, you know, you've seen a lot of interesting experiences out there at your baby in the recent years. You know, a lot of people come and kind of create their own events. Y'all create your own events as a club. You know, you've had things like the Ringer out there, Zach stuff, and just, you know, wide variety of really, really cool things. Did you ever, when you were building a place like that, was there a hope that one day it would become a place that people could make these incredible experiences? Or is that just something that has totally emerged and exceeded your wildest expectations?
It's a little bit of both. You know, it's kind of a hard question. It's a great question, but it's a hard one to answer, because when we were building it, I felt strongly that we were doing something that was going to be really special and really unique and would strongly resonate with the right, well, I shouldn't say the right type, or just a certain type of person.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, people who were, you know, predisposed to having a bit of an open mind about golf and so forth would eat it up and love it. And but the road to get from point A to where we are now was so long and convoluted that, you know, there were many, many times when I just thought, well, me and this very small group of people think it's great, and, you know, maybe that's all it'll be. It should be more, but, you know, well, maybe that's just what it is. And the way it has grown is, I think, deserved, but at the same time, it still surprises and shocks me in some ways. I mean, for sure. Does that make sense? I mean,
absolutely.
It's hard to say that it was expected, because it wasn't, but I thought that maybe that potential was there. It's maybe a shorter, better way of saying it.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember, like, maybe the, I don't know, first or second time I was ever up there, seeing the house that the No Laying Up guys ended up buying, and the for sale sign was out there. And I remember thinking, like, man, that's probably not a bad thing for someone to pick off. And now you got, you know, two houses up there that, you know, were being rented out, you know, on the reg. I remember, you know, our buddy Bob Gaper, and I told him, I was like, Bob, that one of those.
Bob bought that house.
I know he did. I was hampered. I was like, man, Bob, we need to pick this thing up, man. I think this has got a lot of potential.
Yeah.
I just find that to be, you know, pretty remarkable. It's got to be a really cool reminder, you know, just to, you know, to see that people are making investments around this thing that you've created, and creating further experiences than you know, you might could have ever anticipated. That just, what an incredible testament to the product that you have put together out there. And it makes me think sometimes, you know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, golf course architecture is art, which I think it is. It's landscape art, right? But then there's another element to it, right? It's art that you can have these experiences in. And it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people have said over time, you know, once you put a piece of art out in the world, it's no longer yours. It sort of belongs to everybody else. And with a place like Sweetens, you see people bringing it into their own universe and doing interesting things with it. I just, that to me must blow your mind, right? I mean, it's got to be a pretty.
No, it definitely does. And I that's really one of my favorite things about it. I was playing in that tournament the other day with somebody and they mentioned their three favorite holes. And I said to him, you know, it's always interested to hear people's take on, you know, what their favorite holes are, or maybe not their favorite holes, because everybody has a different answer and each person comes at it differently. And, you know, another thing to your point is, like when we were building the golf course, there's obviously a lot of open kind of wide views out there and so forth. And I thought, golly, this would be kind of cool if you hit a golf ball from here to there, but there really was no specific thought put into any of that. And so, you know, these offshoot, you know, kind of off the scorecard, back of the menu holes that are all out there that are, were all found by our members. I mean, these are holes that, you know, there's 70, 80 or more holes out there. And they, you know, guys used to call me like, oh, hey, we played today from, you know, 5 green over to 7 or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. And so, you know, it wasn't like we were intentionally going about doing that in the design process. We were just trying to build a golf course that has much variety and as many potential outcomes as possible kind of infused into it. And then the way people have interacted with that and discovered it on their own has been a really, really fun and cool thing for me to see. And I just love how all that came about organically. And that's through the discovery of the people who use the landscape. That's one of my favorite things about it.
How much do you think the location of Sweetens Cove being in the, you know, the Chattanooga Metroplex, a town that is, I think, one of America's, you know, vastly underrated golf cities.
Yeah.
How much does it matter having a town like that that's got a good golf culture when you talk about the success of Sweetens and sort of those evolutions and the way that people have, you know, grabbed onto it over the years? I mean, does it matter that a place like Chattanooga is where a lot of this kind of was birthed from, or are those things not relevant?
My answer may surprise you a little bit. Now it's, I would say, helpful that it has that proximity to Chattanooga because people are coming from all over the place and they can get out and you know, I'm trying to help a guy right now get on Black Creek, for instance, mm-hmm. while he comes to play Sweetens. And now that Sweetens is a destination, having Chattanooga as a potential place to launch off and play some other places or hang out and have a great evening is valuable for us. Okay. Mm-hmm. It matters now, but Patrick and I used to pull our hair out in the early days with respect to Chattanooga because we just couldn't figure out why we weren't gaining more traction in a golf town that's as good of a golf town as Chattanooga is.
Yeah.
And the reason, or the sort of the answer we came up with as to why we struggled so much for, you know, 4 years or so with drawing people out of Chattanooga is, number one, you have your private club golfers, many of whom, you know, are golf aficionados and you would think would be preconditioned to really liking a place like Sweetens. And, you know, they may have liked it, but in Chattanooga, if you belong to a private club, this is a generalization, but generally speaking, you were very attached to that place. And therefore, they weren't going out to South Pittsburgh, but once or twice a year. They may have liked it, but they weren't, you know, necessarily a real reliable kind of tied in customer. Yeah. And then another generalization is the public golfers in Chattanooga, for the most part, we observed, tend to be value shoppers. So it's not necessarily, you know, what course is interesting architecturally. It's this one's $35 and this one's $40.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably begun to change quite a bit. And, you know, thanks in large part to, you know, people like the fried egg and so forth. There's more knowledge and you know, people respect architecture and the value of it more maybe than they did 5-6 years ago, and therefore, you know, might be more interested in going out and, you know, searching out a place that might cost a little bit more. But it was tough, you know, in the early years, because we were getting oftentimes, I mean, we would have more people on the golf course from New Jersey than we would from Chattanooga. You know, you'd have these diehards, like you had a group of 10 people, like, yeah, we've heard about this place, and they would come in and there'd be 14 people on the golf course, and 10 of them are from New Jersey, and 2 of them are from Chattanooga, and 2 of them are from Scottsboro or something. It's like, why are there not more people from Chattanooga here? And of course, there's exceptions to the rule. I mean, there's a ton of people, you know, who've been very supportive of the golf course from Chattanooga. I'm making generalizations across, sure, the board. You know, mm-hmm, there's always an exception to any comment, basically. But that's kind of what we observed.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And at some point, I would think that dynamic, you know, if it hasn't already, starts to flip, you know, where.
Oh, for sure. And, yeah, and that's why I say now, yeah, that rule doesn't necessarily apply anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But from 2014 to 2017-18, it certainly was in play.
What to you was, what were the signs of the larger tipping point for Sweetens Cove? You know, when, yeah, I mean, you know, at what point did you walk out on a Tuesday and the parking lot was filled and you're like, okay, well, we're really cooking with gas here, you know?
You know, it was just little bits of information, anecdotal evidence here and there. You know, it really was, I think, maybe the first social media golf course. And there was a group of diehards very, very early on that really gave us fuel to believe that there was, this place had legs, and that it continued to be worth fighting for. And then, you know, the first couple of years, it was a lot of that. And then, you know, we would occasionally have a group out that would just go nuts and love it. Like, I have a friend named George Jones from Nashville. He would bring people down and they would just go bonkers for the place. You know, it was like, man, this, we're getting these reactions in sporadic pockets. I would say, I mean, if you really wanted to point to an event that made me realize that we were not going to die, in fact, we were going to make it, would have been that first Ringer event in 2018. Yeah. I mean, that there was, somebody was joking, like, what's the plan if all of golf Twitter, you know, dies at Sweetens Cove? I mean, what's the backup plan? I thought that was really funny because there were so many people there from, you know, different parts of the industry. And I happened to be over in Pinehurst a couple days after that. And I was walking around looking at Pinehurst number 4, and this guy who worked on the maintenance crew came up to me and goes, man, I watched the Ringer all weekend on the phone. That just kind of blew my mind, you know? And at that point in time, we had enough momentum. That was after the New York Times article and some other things that, you know, we knew we were going to make it. But I would say the one thing I do truly credit with saving the golf course was the New York Times article. I mean, I was in full panic mode in like July of 2017. We had no more safety net, nothing. And we were going down in a ball of flames, and we probably had 2 months left and it was going to be done. And there were no more lifelines. And then that article came out, and I've told this story a couple of times, but I was working out on the golf course one day and I came in and there were these two guys in there in the shed with Baltusrol members logo polos on. And I started talking to them and they said they had just come down and flown down just to play Sweetens. They'd read the article in the Times. And once it got in the New York Times, it was like, we weren't making money, but we were not hemorrhaging money to the point where it was, you know, there was you could write that check here and there to, and not, you'd still be able to buy groceries, you know?
Yeah.
And so, we knew then that, like, okay, we're going to make it. We just got to figure it out. But, and then that was, you know, a year or so before the Ringer. And then that the Ringer event was kind of affirmation of that. And our profits had continued to, not profits, but our revenues, mm-hmm. I would say, had gone up. And it would just continued to go in the right direction.
You know, I think about your career as a designer, you know, once Sweden starts to take off, I seem to remember you reading this or saying this. It might have been something I heard you say at the Ringer, but you know, you seem like you were kind of waiting for that next big project, waiting for the phone call to ring. And it almost seemed like, again, that there was some maybe frustration that people weren't calling.
Yeah.
And now, you know, when we were just jumping on the, you know, on the call, you were kind of rattling off, you know, a lot of stuff you've been doing, which is unbelievable. I love to see it. I wonder how much, when you're dealing with a client, a new client, is it now hard to manage some expectations? I mean, do people expect that when you come and touch a piece of ground for them, you're going to be able to turn it into a draw on the level of Sweden's?
I don't. There's no managing expectations because that is our expectation. I mean, we bring the fucking heat every time, period.
I love that answer. That just made my day. Well, and that's, you know, it's so cool to hear that, one, because I know you do. And I've been around you a few times and I can sense that you've got this. You just kind of have an energy about you that you can tell is one of, I was in a conversation with someone earlier and we were talking about the desire to become better at your craft every single day. And I think about the things, you know, where Sweden's was a huge success, you know, what comes next. And again, you rattled off, you know, a couple of different courses that you're working on right now, which I want to dive into a few of them, but you know, you got something like Landman, which is in Nebraska, you know, which seems to be quickly becoming a pretty important part of American golf. And you've got this piece of land that's got incredible scale. And I remember you talking about it, you know, texting me about, you know, some of the things out there a couple of years ago when you were just getting started, and now you're pretty much done. I mean, you know, so what are your expectations for how people are going to receive that? Or what are the things you're hearing about a project like that? I'd be curious to kind of know how you're feeling with something like that getting close to the finish line.
Yeah, we're very, very close. We're basically done. There's just like a few little punch list things. Will Anderson, our client, who he and his dad were really the, I'll just say off the top, you know, the ideal client with the ideal piece of land at the ideal time for King Collins. I mean, I had pissed and moaned about not getting the big call for a long time. And then this was clearly it for us. And, you know, we set about doing something distinctive that would, you know, set us, be different than a lot of the other modern architecture that's out there. And that's not a slight on any of these other courses. Because I think we're in the middle of, to use a little bit of a worn out term, a kind of a renaissance and, you know, renewed interest and very high level, high quality work being put out by a lot of different people. And, but there is a certain sameness to a lot of it, and that doesn't mean they're not great courses, but they do kind of start to blend together a little bit. And you know, we always want to try to do something distinctive and interesting and new. That doesn't necessarily mean Well, it just doesn't necessarily mean wild or whatever. It just means we like to try to put a twist on things. And, you know, the Andersons had this piece of land that was unlike anything Tad and I had ever seen, ever. And that land gave us a jumping off point to try to do something that was going to be different. And in order, like on any project, no matter what the project is, the number one question I think that you have to ask yourself is, you know, what is the ideal final concoction for this piece of land? Okay, what's the best thing this can be? And how do you honor the land by building something that is the best thing that can be on this land? You want to walk away from that piece of land saying, it's not possible to do anything better here. And like when I go to Pinehurst number two, for instance, I walk off that golf course and I say, you cannot have a better golf course here. When you go to Sand Hills, you walk off and go, it's not possible to build another better golf course here. And that's what we wanted to do at Landman, but we wanted it to be, again, you know, unique and different than a lot of these other offerings. And, you know, the Andersons trusted in us and turned us loose. And, you know, Landman was, because of how bold the property is, it required a huge amount of earth moving. It wasn't just like a Sand Hills where they just moved a little bit of dirt or sand for a tee box. And that was like the extent of the earth moving. They, you know, they built out the right side of number four at Sand Hills. And then that's like all anything they moved basically. You know, this was the opposite of that in a lot of ways. And, you know, it was not a site that you would ever intentionally go out to and walk around. While beautiful, it was so extreme, extremely steep slopes down, extremely steep slopes up. And, you know, I think a lot of architects might have been tricked or sort of lulled into trying to route a golf course through a bunch of valleys, and you end up with 13 or 14 valley holes, mm-hmm. and some really long and weird connections in between them, because you can't, the way the land is, you can't build just valley holes. I mean, you'd have really bad connections, but it would have been less earth moving, but it wouldn't have been a compelling course. And so we knew, or we intuitively felt, Tad and I did, that, you know, okay, look, we have to just accept that this is a big earth moving job. It's all about getting the dirt in place to make this a playable, walkable, fun, strategic, highly visual experience. And then you just kind of lay the golf course down on top of that new land. And because the land is so big and so expansive, you can go out there and, you know, you can fill 30, 40 feet or cut 30, 40 feet. And by the time you tie back into natural ground and the grass is down on it, people won't know. I mean, you can't tell. Yeah. So it looks, you know, in a lot of ways, it looks like a, don't really want to use the word minimalist expression because the word's overused, but you understand, it appears that it's been there for a long time and a very natural appearance. And it doesn't have the appearance of a golf course that had tons and tons of dirt moved. I mean, I think that once it's completely grown in and the natives are grown in, you could probably poll, you know, 10 retail golfers and ask them which holes had the most dirt moved on them, and you'd get 10 different answers, which is what we want, you know. And I think that, to our team's credit, I think they did, we had an extremely talented team of guys helping us. I think they did an amazing job, what's called hiding the fill, you know. And I just could not be more excited about what is about to happen out there. I mean, I had this feeling in my stomach when we did Sweetens Cove, like this place is really, really special. Like, this place needs to see the light of day. And there was a lot of times when I thought, well, it's never going to see the light of day. So at least I'll know it was good and Tad will know it was good. But, like, seriously, take the feeling, imagine the way I must have felt in 2014, knowing what Sweetens Cove is now. I was really excited about it. Multiply that times 1,000. I mean, I am so excited about Landland. And as far as what people have been saying about it, I mean, a lot of different opinions. I mean, I would go to Ron Witten's quote. I mean, when Ron Witten came out there, I mean, he said, you know, the earth moving, and Ron's seen everything, you know. He's like, you know, the earth moving was pitch perfect. That's what he told me. You know, the amount of dirt that was moved to create this landscape, and how it's hidden, and he made a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of. He goes, you know, what's so cool about this is not a landscape you would just come out and walk around. Like, this golf course allows you now to interact with this landscape and walk through this landscape, because these hills and valleys, which previously were unwalkable, are now walkable. And it's not an easy walk, but they are going to have a caddy program, and it is walkable. And we made great efforts to make it walkable. It's very important. But you know, that golf course allows people to interact with a landscape they never would have interacted with before. And I mean, Ron said that he felt like it would, you know, I mean, his words, it would be up there with Sand Hills and that type of course in the top 100 lists. I mean, that's where we felt like the Andersons deserved to be with their land, and the way to honor their land and honor their financial commitment was to deliver something that was in that realm. I mean, that's what had to be done. And I think we did it. I think our team did it.
I have, there have been a lot of comparisons, some stronger than others, between just, I think, the way you approach golf design and the way that Mike Stranz did. And I've spent a lot of time, I mean, many hours listening to some hidden tapes that Mike Stranz left behind. And I think what you just iterated over the last few minutes is on point with his philosophy as anything I've ever heard from any other designer. You know, when I think about the way you describe that, and it's so unique, I think it was very unique to him, and now it's certainly unique to you and the work you guys are doing. You know, he believed in 360 degrees of design, where you couldn't find the seams anywhere you looked. And you said it almost very similarly to how he used to put it, which was, you know, he didn't want you to be able to tell the difference between where the nature ended and the art began, right? I mean, and wherever you looked on the property, that was what he was aiming for. And so it's funny, because I think he came along in an era where a lot of the golf design had started to really become indistinguishable. Mm-hmm. And here you are, even though I think the quality of golf design across the board from everyone else is as good as we've seen maybe ever, but at the same time, you know, if you put 15 of the greatest Renaissance paintings all together on one big wall, average Joe not really going to be able to tell you all that much difference between them. But if you hung a Picasso next to it or a Dali next to it, it tends to stand out a little bit. I kind of tend to put you and Mike in, you know, I'm not to make direct comparisons of your works, but I just feel like there's just this similar energy that you both have with your work. And to hear, you know, Witten's comment like that, you know, the pitch perfect on the amount of dirt, that seems like, because the next question I was going to ask you is there a certain signature that you try to leave in your work? And maybe that's it, is can we get, you know, we're not trying to be the uber minimalist. We're not trying to also reconstruct every detail. We're trying to get pitch perfect with the amount of dirt that needs to be moved to make the best possible golf course on this piece of property. I think that's a wonderful.
I think that's a good way to say it. I mean, Sweetens Cove needed to move a lot of dirt.
Sure.
Landman needed to move a lot of dirt. At Overton Park, we didn't need to move as much dirt. At Red Feather, we have to move a lot of dirt. You know, there's other projects we're looking at where we won't need to move that much dirt. But it's all about figuring out the distilling down and let the land tell you what is the question that needs to be answered, and understanding, you know, the fundamental, most important thing that this golf course should be in its final version, final iteration, for it to be the best version of itself that it can be, and also be one that is what the client needs it to be, the best it can be for each particular client. I mean, each question, each situation is different. And so you have to kind of figure out what that is. And it's different for each place.
What do you think are some of the things, you know, as you're going from project to project that you're learning right now that's making your work better with each new turn of dirt?
I mean, Tad and I are always learning something new. I mean, there's always something to be gleaned from a project, or a set of lessons. You know, he and I'll debrief after a project, or maybe in the middle of a project, we'll say, well, we learned a lesson there. Maybe we should do the next time we encounter that. It's hard to say there's one or two overarching things, but I think that every time you do learn something new.
Yeah.
From each one. And they're just lessons you can apply going forward.
You mentioned the project at Overton Park in Memphis. I assume that's a pretty urban setting, right? I mean, right in the middle of the city?
Yeah, right in the middle of the city. Beautiful piece of ground right near old growth forest. The largest old growth forest in any American city is in Memphis,
wow. Tennessee.
I would not have gotten on a multiple choice. I don't think many people would, but it's a beautiful part of town, really neat, historic old course. And we're very, very excited about that. And they're growing it in now and hopefully be ready sometime, you know, late spring or summer next year.
What's the scale of that project? How many holes is that going to be?
It's 9 holes and okay. It's about 300 yards. And wow. It's just a place for all different types of golfers. You know, one of the really cool things about when we were doing that project is we had tons of people come up to us and talk about you know, they remember the first time they cleared the ditch on 7, the first time they hit it through the gap on 2. You know, there was a thing called the Overton Park Open, which used to be one of the biggest junior tournaments in the country. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, told me the most nervous I've ever been over a tee ball was when I was 8 years old and I was teeing off in front of 200 people on that port. You know, these are imprinted memories in people's minds, and that's a very important place in Memphis. And we wanted to build a golf course that, you know, was of that landscape and, but it improved shot making interest and so forth. It had become pretty dilapidated and, but one that would accommodate everyone from a first time player to a, you know, a scratch player. And so, we built some really interesting kind of lay of the land greens and, built a few bunkers out there. And, I'm really, really proud of what was accomplished there by our team. I think it's a really cool spot.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that, you know, you're bringing some of the work you're doing into a place like that where, you know, just all kinds of different people can come and experience it, you know, in a really unique way. You mentioned Red Feather. Tell me about what's going on down there in that neck of the wood.
We're in Lubbock, Texas, building a golf course for a guy named Brad Roston. And J.J. Killeen, the West Texas Driving Range Pro, is involved also. Just two really awesome guys. And not that you ever aren't, like I said earlier, we always bring the heat. We're ready to go for anyone. But when you get guys like Brad and J.J., it just amps up the energy and the desire to leave something special behind all the more because they're such awesome guys. And, you know, Red Feather is an interesting project. The site is in a thing called a Playa Lake, which is an ancient drainage area where the water comes to. So if you looked at the aerial of the course pre-construction, it's a very flat site. I mean, it's 135 acres. There's probably, you know, 15 feet of fall over the entire site. So pretty flat. But it's this big depression in the ground. It looks like an old crater or something. And it's where, you know, 1,000 acres or more, or whatever, drains into that area. And that the water's got to soak into the soil. Soil drains very well. So if you're going to build a golf course in a Playa Lake, there's a huge amount of engineering that has to go into making sure that you respect these ancient historic abilities for the earth to allow the water to percolate into the surface, the ground, and have a certain amount of storage. So in order to get this job approved environmentally, we had to move like 1 million cubic yards of dirt and heavily, you know, AutoCAD, you know, plans, etc. You know, Tom Doak went through the same thing with the Rawls course at Texas Tech. You know, you have to get a certain amount of storage below a certain elevation in order to do that. Here's how much dirt you got to move. And they run rainwater models and all this stuff. Long and short of it is, you know, if you go on our website and look at the plan, it's a, you know, very sort of free flowing, wide open golf course. Lots of strategy around short grass and contour, which we love. The superintendent, Garrett Holt, out there is going to do a great job with maintaining this new type of zoysia, really firm, really tight, really fast. You can grow bent grass on the greens in Lubbock because it's at 3,000 feet, which I did not know that. But yeah, it's cool enough at night too, you can grow bent grass. So it's a really nice combination of turf. And we've got these cool kind of barrancas and swales meandering through the project or through the golf course that all are part of that ability to get down to a low enough elevation for water storage and flood control and that kind of thing. And so we're incorporating all these barrancas and swales into the strategy of the course. And, you know, we'll have some really cool, bold, artistic bunkering, got some double greens, really, really close. It's a private course. So, we're sticklers about close green to tee relationships as it is, but being private, I mean, you can basically, I mean, one step off the back of the green, you're on the next tee thing. And, it's going to be really fun to, you know, we're getting to the point now, Mark, Berger's out there building a few greens. We've had John Ellsworth, who was on some of our projects, Landman, out there, you know, doing a lot of the heavy earth moving, getting the dirt in place. And I'm going back out there next week and, you know, we'll start making some edits on some of the stuff that's getting laid down and just, you know, keep turning it up. So as far as Texas golf goes, I think it's going to be a really, really unique spot that's not like much else out there. I mean, I guess the two closest things you could think of in Texas would be, I guess philosophically would be Wolf Point and Trinity Forest.
Any trees out there? Is it all
there's no trees now, but Brad has acquired an adjacent piece of property with these awesome mature oak trees and different varieties of trees, and it's we can tree spade them, take them, you know, a quarter mile away, don't even have to go across the road because it's an adjacent property, and put them, you know, strategically kind of place them in the golf course, which will be awesome because that will help really give it a very mature look, you know, right off the bat.
Yeah, that's
cool. So we're super excited about that. And we're just now entering the phase of where it's really starting to the fun stuff. You know, we had to move a ton of earth for the first 2 or 3 months just to get to the point where we could get to the really fun stuff. And so we're getting into the fun, really fun part now. And just, I'm really pumped about what the guys have got going out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. What about up in New York earlier this year, you opened up the Ness course up there.
Ennis is up. It's doing great. They we got Anthony Minetti and Sean Smith are up there with the crew taking care of it, and you know, that was our charge there, was basically to kind of build the back nine of Sweetens. So very, very Sweetens-esque, very similar project to Sweetens in a lot of ways, built in a lowland area. But we had more contour to work with there. There's three holes that are kind of up on a hill, and then it kind of winds down the bottom six holes in the lower area, kind of similar to Sweetens. You know, some real bold contouring around the greens. Some kind of eccentric, quirky features. But it's a beautiful piece of land, and those guys are doing an awesome job taking care of it. It's continuing to mature, and you know, every time I see a new picture, it just looks better and better. And feedback on it's been great. People are having a blast. And I think that once people really discover that place, particularly with the cool amenities that Lee and Tabo and the ownership group have put in, it's going to be really, really popular. I mean, it's only an hour and a half from New York City. I mean, I think they're going to be run over, really. It's, you know, that is definitely, again, kind of a unique offering that stands out from a lot of the other golf courses in the area, or even, you know, in New York. I mean, it's different than, you know, a lot of the places you get, it's kind of a twist on some of these classic themes. And I think people have really enjoyed it. We're definitely proud of it.
A lot of talk, obviously, about the COVID golf boom. I mean, I've experienced it at our club here in Tallahassee. I think every golf business in the country is experiencing some level of, you know, increased revenue right now. Is your phone ringing off the hook? I mean, are you got people calling, wanting to kick tires on lots of things right now? I mean,
we've had a huge uptick in our calls. I don't know, you know, there is definitely a golf boom going on right now, and that certainly helps. But I think we were kind of trending in that direction even before COVID started, and we've got a really nice list of upcoming projects and potential projects, and I couldn't be happier with where we are.
Yeah,
I wish I could talk about more of them, but hopefully we'll have more stuff to talk, but some very, very exciting potential things out there for us.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, we got to save stuff for, you know, when you bring you back on here next year.
That's right.
Thinking about, you know, things that maybe you wish you could get your hands on, you know, maybe not necessarily specific to existing courses or anything, but, you know, are there types of land forms that you would really just, you know, salivate at the idea of getting your hands on, or regions within the United States that you kind of have elevated on your to-do list, wish list, bucket list?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of sandy spots in the Southeast that could yield some absolutely amazing golf courses. We've got a lead on a few of those that would be absolutely incredible if they happen. Yeah. You know, there's always, you know, the dream place of a, you know, kind of a coastal environment somewhere in the world, on sand dunes. There's a few of those out there, that are being talked about, and, you know, something like that obviously would be awesome. You know, we feel like we can do a good job, you know, put us in the right situation with the right client, and we're going to deliver for you. And that's just something we take pride in, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may, as far as where the places are. But there's definitely a lot of good places out there.
When you're kind of getting into your creative process on these projects, you know, everybody's a little different. Some people work early in the morning, late at night, whatever. You know, what's the Rob Collins creative process like? You know, when you're in that imagining phase of thinking about a piece of property, doing heavy dreaming. I've seen you, you know, sketching stuff on the back of puke bags on the airplane and stuff like that. I mean, what's that process look like for you?
Well, I'm usually – I work out of home, and, you know, do stuff on the drafting table at home. And then, you know, we try to get kind of an interesting concept on that can provide basically a framework of what we want to do. And then from there, it's really all field work. I mean, it's okay, guys, here's the rough concept. Here's the box we're trying to work in. Give us something that's in this box. And then then we massage from there. And so, you know, it's all about getting that framework and then just dialing it in day after day on site. And that's really the fun part.
You know, Gil talks about listening to Grateful Dead when he's out there on the tractor. You listen to music when you're out there in the field working, or are you?
Yeah, I've always listened to music. I mean, I've got all kinds of different stuff. I'm working on a plan right now, and I got to get in the zone with the plans a lot of times and listen. I mean, all kinds of different things. I mean, that Landman playlist I came up with is a pretty good example. A little bit of rap, a little bit of Pavement, a little bit of 90s music, a little bit of 80s music, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So
I love it. Well, you might have to send me that playlist so I can dive into it when I kind of make it out there.
Yeah, you bet.
I love it. That's great. Well, Rob, maybe circling back real quick before we depart, you know, back to Sweetens and the mothership. I know there's, you know, again, a lot of talk in recent years with some of your ownership partners and things, and some further big dreams still coming together out there. Where does all that stand? What's the next project out at Sweetens Cove Golf Club?
Nothing super new to report. You know, there have been rumblings about a possible short course of, you know, modeled after the Cradle or something like that, which obviously would be a good fit. We've got the room for it. You know, overnight accommodations are an obvious addition that need to happen. We haven't figured out how we're going to do that yet, but that needs to happen. And then, you know, every year at the end of the year, we kind of sit down and reassess where we are and what we're doing and how we can be better. And just like building a golf course, you're trying to figure out what the best avenue is to put the best golf course on that piece of land. On the Sweetens Cove piece of land, now that it's a operating facility, it's what can we do with what we've got to give the best possible experience? Where are we lacking? The obvious answers to me are food service. I mean, we don't need an elaborate food service thing, but we need to be able to give people a place to hang out, something to eat, whether it's a food truck or a small thing that we do. But, you know, high quality, but affordable, but something to put in your stomach. I'd like to see a few bars out there, you know, so, you know, that can help improve the vibe and the feel and everything. We've got a great pavilion and the Heckle Deck. I'd like to, you know, add some, you know, continue to develop around those as far as just accessories, you know, better hangout spaces, you know, maybe some couches, that kind of stuff, maybe some TVs. I don't know. I mean, just things to continue to improve the experience. I mean, that's something that we've had it's been a great year at the golf course this year. And one of the things we're going to do this winter is, you know, I want to sit down and really be able to come to our friends out in the golfing world and say, here's how we're going to improve next year and make Sweetens even better. And, you know, we don't have any plans to raise rates next year. I think what I want to do is keep the rates where they're at but make the experience better. And so that's kind of what we're going to try to do this year.
Well, I love to hear that, and I'm overdue for a return visit.
Let me know. You got my number.
Yeah, I will. I'll let you know when I'm pointing those wheels north again, because it's a magical place. And I, Rob, I think it's so cool that you're creating magical places all over the country. And I think that when someone plays a King Collins golf course, they're going to have a hard time not falling more in love with golf, and that's what I'm all about. And I think you are too.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for your time, and keep moving that dirt in all kinds of pretty ways, buddy.
All right, man. Great talking to you.
Always a treat, man. We'll talk soon.
Yep.